Okay, welcome back. Isru Chag Sameach for those of us here in Israel. Hope you managed to weather over Shavuot during these difficult times. Cheesecake is usually a good remedy for much of what ails us, but I'm not sure that it can do the trick for everything we need. But at the same time, it can't hurt. We are at the bottom of Masechet Ta'anit, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, 13:13a. Toshma, come and listen to this. We're trying to figure out what the parameters of the prohibitions on the public fast days are. So Toshma, De'omar Rabbi Abba HaKohen, Mishum Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. Maseh v'metu banav shel Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Chanina. V'rachatz betzonein kol shiva. Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Chanina, Rachmona Litzlan, buried more than one child. His sons died. How many sons? Well, I guess at least two, if we're talking plural. And during the shiva, he bathed in cold water. So that seems to say that when you're in Avelut, when you're mourning during the 7 days of Avelut, you are allowed to bathe, or at least allowed to bathe in cold water. Earlier, the Gemara had suggested that you're not allowed to bathe at all. So the Gemara does not accept this as a proof for anything. Usually, a ma'aseh, an actual case, not something theoretical, but practical. If we can look at the Chachamim, if we can look at the religious practice of the Chachamim, that's called a ma'aseh. And knowing how they acted, on the presumption that they act righteously and properly, is proof that that behavior is acceptable. But sometimes you have to understand the background to the case to know whether it's an exception to a rule or whether it is, in fact, a demonstration of the rule. So the Gemara rejects this story, this sad story of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, who bathed during the Avelut on his sons. And why? Hatam, in that case, Keshetakfuhu Avelav Hava. When you have back-to-back Avelut, you know, such things happen. You hear stories about, one parent dies, and then shortly after the other parent dies. And sometimes you can have two Avelut that run right into the next. Something like that happened in the neighborhood sometime not long ago. I forget what the case was. This happened to my mother. Her father died, and not exactly, it didn't overlap, but very the following week. She got up from Shiva, and then the following week, her mother died. But you can imagine a case where, you're going to bury another loved one while you're still sitting Shiva for the first case. So in that case, when you have Avelut after Avelut, you have this Retzef of Shiva. So that Hichbid Se'ero Mekel Betar. During that Avelut, if you're in the case, let's say, of Shloshim, when you're not allowed to cut your beard or cut your hair, if you have one Shloshim and it runs right into another Shloshim, so your hair has grown so long that it's cumbersome, so you're allowed to lighten your hair. You can't get a haircut, you can't go to the barber, but you can take a razor and take a trim. Umechabes k'suto b'mayim. You could do laundry in cold water, but not in hot water, because normally you don't wear freshly laundered clothing during Avelut, but there's a limit. I mean, how long can somebody sit in the same dirty clothing if you have 2 weeks of Shiva back to back? So Amar Rav Chisda, Bita'ar Avalo B'misperayim. When we allow this person who's experiencing multiple Shivas or multiple Avelut, one right after the other, so we allow him to trim his hair with a razor, but not to get a proper haircut. B'mayim, when we allow him to wash his clothes in cold water, velo benatar velo bechol, and not with soap or detergent or with, it seems funny to us, but there was a practice to wash your clothing in sand. If you've ever seen any old movies of people going down to the riverbank to wash their clothing, which always seems strange to me because, you know, you ever go swimming in a river? I grew up going to swimming pools. We went to this very pristine, hygienic swimming pool. So on the rare occasion we'd go swimming in a lake or at the river, I always found it a little gross because it's dirty. So I never understood, how are they washing their clothing? Even in the cleanest river, you know, it's not like clean tap water like we have. But I guess in those days when even the well water was not perfect, that's what they did. It was the best they had. And that idea, you take the water and you scrub the clothing together, they would use sand as an abrasive to wash their clothing. Right? In other words, the abrasion, you know, there are certain soaps like this that have, what do they call those? Exfoliants in the soap. And that's what gets it clean. You know, they tell you that's, you know, now that we've been spending all this time washing our hands all year and putting on the Alka-Gel and everything else, what really gets rid of the germs is not so much the soap, but the exfoliation. Rubbing your hands under water like this is not exactly as good as using soap, but it's pretty close, right? That's the idea, that the soap or the Alka-Gel is the thing that does it. Usually just washing your hands with water and rubbing them gets rid of much of the problem. So in the days of old, they would wash their clothing in presumably clean sand, not muddy sand. And the sand would serve as an exfoliant to get rid of much of the dirt. Then they would wash the sand out. Or they had other types of chemicals that had detergent-like properties. That's what this nettar is. So you can't wash your clothing with detergent, but you can wash your clothing in cold water. If you have, like when you're in the army or when you're in the summer camp or things like that, if you can't do proper laundry and you take your shirt and you rinse it, you soak it in cold water and rinse it out and dry it out, it's better than nothing. It does a lot to get out the stink. I even remember when I was in the Boy Scouts, you know, everybody had a mess kit. You know, you had like that, like you have in the army. Your mess kit, it's, you know, your bowl and your plate and your cup and your fork and your knife and your spoon. It all kind of fits together into one thing. So they taught us how to wash it, how you can wash it with sand, right? The sand, if you don't have like a sponge or something that scrubs off the schmutz, sand will do the trick. So that's similar to this case here in the Gemara. So Omar Rava, aval mutar lichotz bitzonin kol shiva. Rava says that a mourner is allowed to take a bath in cold water the whole shiva, the whole seven days of mourning. Mide dahave abisra v'chamra. Just like he's allowed to eat meat and drink wine. Someone who's an onen, right? Onen is the most severe form of avelut. It's the period of time. Who's giving us this feedback here? I'm muting everyone. You can unmute yourself if you want to speak, but there's too much feedback. During aninut, the period between the death of the loved one and burial, is the most profound level of mourning. The mourner is not allowed to eat meat or drink wine. Was anybody else there? David, weren't you in the Boy Scouts?
Cub Scouts,
okay. So, all right. So during Aninut, you're not allowed to eat meat or drink wine. But during Avelut, you are allowed to eat meat and drink wine. The Shulchan Aruch says you shouldn't drink too much wine. We tend to think of wine as being something festive. In the days of old, wine was, you know, much more of an everyday wine. Certainly other types of like beer or the equivalent was a much more everyday drink, because a lot of times water was bad to drink. You couldn't drink the water because it contained all types of things that would kill you. But if the water had been turned into wine or beer or things like that, the alcohol would get rid of all of the bacteria and things that were floating around. So the truth is you're allowed to drink wine within limit and eat meat during Shiva. So
Rava says in Mishle about to sahalo vervia in the marinefesh, like it's something that you almost would expect to give a mourner.
Right.
Someone.
You shouldn't make a party out of it, but there's nothing, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a little, you know, very, oftentimes you go into a Shiva house and people are eating. I do remember when my father-in-law, Zichrono Levracha, passed away, we were all in the hospital. And, you know, it takes a, like, you know, somebody passes away, you're not like out of the hospital in a half hour. We were there for many hours until, you know, everybody had gathered and the body was taken to the morgue and paperwork had to be done and the death certificate had to be issued and, you know, the plans for the funeral had to be made. It was many hours. So at one point we're all sitting around and some well-intentioned, you know, person went down to the, you know, in Hadassah, down to the mall and bought a bunch of hamburgers to bring back because people were hungry. It was, you know, we'd been there all day and it was he passed away in the late afternoon. This was already getting late at night. There were even some of the little kids there. So I had to tell people, I had to tell the, you know, the people that were the mourners, you can't eat the hamburgers. You know, a lot of people don't realize that during Aninut, you can't eat meat. So Rava's point is that washing in cold water during Shiva should not be more serious than not eating meat and drinking wine during Shiva. And just like you're allowed to eat meat and drink wine during Shiva, so you should be able to bathe in cold water during Shiva. Meitveh. So the Gemara attacks that assumption. That was a havamina. That was a hypothesis, but the Gemara attacks that. And here at the top of Yud Gimel Amud Beis says, Ein habogeret. Here's a braita. Ein habogeret rasha'a linavel et atzma bimei evel aviha. When a grown girl, a girl of marriageable age, is sitting Shiva for her, here it says father, I presume it means also for mother, she's sitting Shiva for parents, or maybe she's just sitting Shiva at all, she cannot make herself, she is not allowed to make herself unattractive. Because, you know, we wouldn't want to ruin her shidduch prospects. If she goes a whole week without bathing, maybe she won't look so nice, and maybe that'll affect her shidduch prospects. So the Braisa suggests that that not only is she allowed to bathe, but she's not allowed not to bathe. Ha na'ara rasha'a. But a young girl, a little girl who's not yet on the marriage market, she is allowed to make herself unattractive through not bathing. My love berchitza. Right, so what are we talking about? We're talking here about bathing. Uvamai. And what kind of water is she have to bathe in order to not let herself grow unattractive? Ilema bachamin ein habogeret rasha'a. So if you want to say that she's allowed, that a bogeret, that a marriageable girl during Shiva is allowed to bathe even in hot water, that would be a big chiddush. V'ha'omar Rav Chisda, aval asur lahoshit etzpo'o b'chamin. We say that a mourner can't even put his pinky finger in hot water during Shiva. And you're going to allow this girl to take a whole hot bath just so she should remain attractive? Ela lav betzonin. So it must be that this bogeret, this girl, is allowed to bathe in order to keep up a certain appearance, but she's allowed to bathe only in cold water. So the Gemara says, lo, what are we talking about that she's not allowed to let herself grow unattractive? We're not talking about bathing at all, neither in hot nor in cold. We're talking about kichol ufirchus, about makeup and hairdos. A marriageable age girl during Shiva is allowed to put on makeup, is allowed to have her hair done. Firchus might mean let her color her hair. They used to use different types of dyes to to color. Obviously, we're not talking about from gray. Usually people color their hair because they don't want the gray to be seen. But here we're talking about a young girl who presumably doesn't have gray, but they did something to their hair. Maybe they powdered their hair, powdered wigs. Again, because people didn't... This bathing in hot and cold, I've already mentioned a few times, in the pre-modern era, people didn't bathe all that much to begin with. You know, a marriageable age girl, Becholzot, was not taking hot baths every single day, unless she was really like from the wealthiest of the wealthy. So there were all types of things that were done in order to disguise what would have been to our refined modern 21st century noses, what would have been a real foul stench. If we could travel back in time to the 18th century, let alone to the 5th or 4th century, the very first thing we would notice upon getting out of our time machine would be the stench. The streets were full of garbage. There was no proper sanitation, right? And people's bodies, the body odor, was just out of whack with what we are used to in modern society. So they would powder and perfume themselves. They would powder their hair, perfume their hair. Maybe that's what purchus is. It might be some kind of coloring. The point is that these girls are allowed during Shiva to apply cosmetics in order to maintain some of their beauty and not to affect their shidduch prospects. You can imagine during Shiva, lots of people are coming in and out of a house. They're taking a look at this girl, particularly if she lost her father. There might be even more imperative for her to be able to attract a good shidduch because, you know, her prospects were tenuous because of her situation. So from this case, you can't learn anything about the halacha of bathing. So lema misayele de omer Rabbi Abba HaKohen mishum Rabbi Yossi HaKohen maseo meitu banav shel Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina v'rachatz v'tzonen kol shiva. So that should be a proof to the story of Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, who bathed in cold water during the shiva for his sons, the back-to-back shiva for his sons. So omre, the Gemara says, that case, again, it's repeating itself, takfu avelav ze'achar ze'. Hechbid se'ra meke'a batara, mechabes k'suto b'mayim, omer av chizda b'ta'ar, avalo b'misparayim, b'mayim v'lo b'netar, v'lo b'chol. V'lo, v'lo b'chol, v'lo b'ahal. Ahal was some type of plant that was like natar. It was a type of plant whose properties were like detergent, right? So you could, I'm not sure what kind of plant it is.
Rabbi Yossi, if you're saying that the reason he was able to bathe was because of these back-to-back of Elut, so I think obviously the first Avilut, he wouldn't have bathed because you didn't have a back-to-back yet. It would only be on the second one.
Yeah, so it would be on the second one. Obviously, yeah. And so, Lema, so Ika da Amre, Omar Rava, Aval Asur Betzonen Kol Shiva, Maishna Mibasar V'yayin, Hatam, Lefakuche Pachdei Hu da Avid. So he rejects this idea that we can make an extension from the Basar V'yayin case to the bathing case, right? They have nothing to do with each other. Why does halacha allow an avel to have meat and wine? Because an avel is, well, he's going to be a little depressed, but he's also going to be weak. He's also going to be, I was at a shiva in Kfar Etzion, a friend of mine lost, you know, there were these two terrible shivas this past week that were both cut short by Chag. In Neve Daniel, a young man relatively young man, a man in his 40s, passed away. And in Kfar Tzion, a woman in her 40s passed away. She had cancer. And the fellow in Neve Daniel, it was a bizarre complication of orthopedic surgery. He had knee surgery and then developed a blood clot and died. A terrible tragedy, both leaving behind children. So I went to the shiva in Kfar Etzion, and it was one of those shivas that was very crowded. There must have been, I don't know, he was sitting in the backyard. The family was sitting in the backyard, you know, like in one of these impromptu tents. There must have been 70 people there, because there was only really like 2 days of shiva. Right, it was like Friday. The funeral, I think, was on Thursday. The shiva was on Friday, and then on Erev Yontif, and so everybody had to pack it in. And he was telling the story. You know, that's a lot of what shiva is. It's like just like telling the story. You know, of like what happened when we knew she was sick, what happened when she died, blah, blah, you know, all of the different details. But it was almost like a performance. Like almost like on the hour, every hour, he repeated the story of exactly what happened. Because you couldn't engage in any real conversation the way that you do sometimes at a shiva if it's just two or three people, because there were so many people. So there's just something mentally exhausting about shiva. I mean, shiva, you think you sit around all week, you do nothing. Other people bring you your meals. You can't do laundry. You can't do work. You can't be doing all the normal things. But it's absolutely physically and mentally exhausting, just the whole process of the thing. So that's what Chazal said. That's why you need meat and wine. Meat fortifies you. It strengthens you. Wine does the same. So in other words, the allowance to eat meat and wine during shiva is because of the need of the mourner. Right, we have to give them a little. It's not to cheer him up per se. It's not to celebrate. We think of like meat and wine as something celebratory. Ein simcha ela babasar v'yayin. Probably somebody spoke about that over Shavuot, right? You know, like there's always that shiur. Like sometimes I think that those shiurim on Shavuot night, it's the same shiur every year. What was the date of Matan Torah? Who wrote the last six psukim in the Torah? If Moshe was already dead, was the Torah given? What Torah was given at Har Sinai? And what about cheesecake? Like, what's the deal with eating dairy on Shavuot? You know, there's certain topics you can count on hearing about every year on. Every year on Shavuot, and that's one of them. So the question is, since we generally have a principle of Ein Simcha Ela B'Basar V'Yayin, that the joy, the celebratory nature of Yom Tov requires us to eat meat and drink wine, so how can we be doing nothing but eating cheesecake? So it's a Shaila. Some people are careful to first have cheesecake and then wash their mouth and then have Basar V'Yayin. But it's a mistake to think of basar v'yayin, meat and wine, which indeed are celebratory menu items, but they're not only celebratory menu items. When we tell the mourners they can do it, it's not in celebration. It's nutritional. It's to keep them strong, stop them from getting sick. Wait, I lost my place. So lema misaile ena bogeret resha. What happened here? Did I skip? So lema misaile ena bogeret resha la lenavelatzma ha naara resha b'mai. If we say that the bogeret is allowed to wash in warm water, that can't be. So we allow her, the girl, the marriageable age girl, is not allowed to wash neither in hot nor in cold, but she is allowed to put on cosmetics. Omer of chizda zotomeret, avel asur betechboset kol shiva. A mourner. A mourner it's usur for a mourner to do laundry all of Shiva. V'hilchata, the halacha is avel asur lirchotz kol gufo bein b'chamin bein b'tzonein kol Shiva. So here's the bottom line. A mourner can't wash neither in hot nor in cold the all 7 days. Aval panav yadav raglav bechamin asur betzonein mutar. But you're allowed to wash your hands and your face and your feet, individual body parts, you're allowed to wash in cold water during Shiva. Aval lasuch afilu kol shehu asur. But to anoint yourself with oils, which was, you know, we know this from Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, right? To smear ointments and oils on you that are perfumes or other types of enjoyable pleasures. So that's asur altogether. We're not talking about medicines, of course. Topical medicines, of course, are permitted. V'im la'aber et hazuhama mutar. But if you're putting on something to get rid of the schwitz, right? So that's permitted. You know, there was a question on Yom Kippur, I guess, in Tisha B'Av, about using the alcohol. Is alcohol a form of sicha, of like anointing, of smearing some kind of cream on yourself? So no, obviously not, because it's not done for pleasure. It's not done for beautifying. It's not done for making you smell better, right? So that's obviously something else. Now the Gemara returns to, hold on, let me I see how I put the cursor in the wrong place and I skipped a, okay, view. Okay, you see where we are now? Now the Gemara goes back to the topic of Anenu, the prayer which is added in on a public fast day. Saluta de ta'anita hechi madkiranan. Madkarinan, the prayer, saluta, the prayer of the fast day, where do you mention it? Where do you stick in the Anenu prayer in the Shmon Esrei? Ad berei Rav Yehuda l'Rav Yitzchak berei v'darash. Rav Yehuda told his son Rav Yitzchak to say a drasha, and he, like, normally students in front of their rabbis don't teach, and sons in front of their fathers don't teach. They defer to the elder. But here, Rav Yehuda told his son, go ahead, you know, say a shir, say a drasha, say something, say a halacha. And what he said was, Yachid shekibela lav ta'anit mitpalel shel ta'anit. An individual, not on a public fast day, not on a calendar fast day, but an individual who accepts upon himself a fast should pray the prayer of the fast day. He should add in Anenu. Veheichan amra, where should he recite it? Ben goel lerofe. Between the bracha of goel Yisrael and the bracha of Rifa'enu. Which, if you look in the Siddur, you'll see on a public fast day, when the Shaliach Tzibur recites the Amidah, that's where he inserts Anenu. Our custom, the individual, always recites Anenu where? In which part of the Tefillah?
In Shmakolenu.
I'm sorry. Hold on a second. Yes. So hechi mad karinan ad bein goel Yisrael le rifaino. Matkif lo rav. Rav attacks this idea. He objects to it. He says v'chi yochid kovea bracha latzmo. How can an individual add in a bracha into the Amidah? Ela Omar Rav Yitzchak b'shomea tfila. He adds it in. He should say it in shomea tfila, because shomea tfila is the kind of catch-all. It's the fill in the blank. We know that a person can always, as a matter of fact, the Gemara in Brachot says not only can, but there's an opinion in the Gemara in Brachot. We don't pask in this way. This is not the halacha lamaaseh, but there's a suggestion in the Gemara in Brachot that you must add in something personal into your tefillah. That if you just recite the set text, your tefillot are not tachanunim, they are not worthy to be accepted on high. That's not the operative halacha, but it is a kind of ideal that we should aspire to personalize our tefillot. But generally speaking, the place to do that is in the bracha of Shomea Tfila. And within the bracha of Shomea Tfila, usually in the siddur there's a little asterisk where you can add. It's the same place where we add in Anenu on a fast day. You can add in whatever you want Hashem to hear, you can add in at that point. But the idea of inserting on an individual fast day a separate bracha into the Amidah is not something that generally an individual is allowed to do. So therefore, Rav says, Rav objects and says that Rav Sheshet says, I'm sorry, Rav Yitzchak objects and says that Rav Sheshet says it should be done in Shomea Tfila. So Meitvei, Ein Bein Yochid, so now the Gemara attacks that idea. Ein ben yochid letzibur, ela shezeh mitpalel shmona esrei, vizeh mitpalel tsha esrei. So what's the Gemara says the Braisa. What does the Braisa say? The Braisa says that an individual on a fast day davens 18 brachot. And anenu is not for the individual, for the private shmona esrei, anenu is not a separate stand-alone bracha, but is something added into the Shmon Esrei, and the Shaliach Tzibur adds Anenu as a standalone bracha, so he gets to 19. Now, of course, all of these numbers are off, because everybody today davens 19. You know, everybody knows this, that Shmon Esrei, the 18 blessing prayer, is a misnomer, because at some point a 19th bracha was added, but the nickname was never updated. So just change the numbers here, 18 to 19 and 19 to 20, because the basic Shemona Esrei is already 19. That's a kind of funny statement. That's like one of those things you have to be an insider to understand. Right? You have to be like part of the language. Right? It's like the person that goes into the restaurant and says, "Today is 9 days. I can't eat meat but dairy, so I will order fish." Right? So if you're not a partner to the language, there's not a word in that sentence that makes sense. But if you are a partner to the language, to know that today is 9 days, how can one day be 9 days? If one day is 9 days, why can't I eat meat? If I can't eat meat, I have to eat dairy. If I have to eat dairy, how does fish help me? Fish is not neither meat nor dairy. But we all understand what it means. So the 18 brachot have 19, and the 19 brachot have 20 when you add one for the shliach tzibur on a fast day. Vezemit pal chasri, my yochid umay tzibur. So who's an individual and who's a community? Ilema yochid mamish, an actual a person all by himself, v'tzibur shaliach tzibur, hani chasre esrin v'arba have. So the Gemara now introduces an idea which we haven't really seen before. It says, what are you talking about, 19 brachot? On a fast day, there are 24 brachot. Now, we don't do this, but in the days of old, there were brachot that were added in on the public fast days. The Gemara will explain where do you get these extra six, brachot. Elalav hachikamar. So what's the Braisa really saying? Ein ben yochid de kibel alav ta'anit yachid, le yochid she kibel alav ta'anit tzibur. The prayer for an individual who accepts upon himself an individual fast, like let's say for a yahrzeit. Right? When you are fasting for a yahrzeit, that's an individual fast. You're the only one in the room that's fasting. Nobody else is saying any other prayers related to the fast day. It's just you. And your private Shemon Esrei, you add in the Aneinu and Shomea Tefillah. But then there's also a yachid, an individual, who's part of a community of fasters. Right? Soon enough, it'll be Shivasa Batamas, another 40 days. Another 40 days, you know, that's the connection. Like, we've been so focused on the 49 days from Pesach to Shavuos. But there's another cycle. We don't count it. There's no Sefirat HaOmer for it. But there's another cycle now of 40 days from Shavuos until Shavuos or Batamuz. And those 40 days are the 40 days that Moshe was up there. There's the Chet HaEgel. He comes down, and the Luchot are broken on Shavuos or Batamuz, right? That's the 40 days. And then after that, you wait to go back up on, he waits to go back up on Rosh Chodesh Elul. And from Rosh Chodesh Elul to Yom Kippur is another 40 days. So there's all these different cycles of counting, right? Which we should be mindful of, even though there's no mitzvah to count. So Od Ma'at, it'll be Shavuos or Batamuz. We'll go to Shul on Shavuos or Batamuz, the next upcoming fast day. And everybody will be fasting. Every individual will be fasting. And every individual in his or her own Shmon Esrei will say Aneinu. And then the Shliach Tzibur will say Aneinu as a bracha bifnei atzmo, as an individual bracha, separate from everyone else. And that will be a standalone bracha in the middle of the Shmon Esrei, not in Shomea Tfilah. So Ella Lav Hochik Omar Ein Ben Yochid Kibel Alav Tanit Yochid Liyochid Shekibel Alav Tanit Tzibur. So it doesn't matter whether you're an individual fasting by yourself, like for a yahrzeit, or an individual praying his own silent private prayer of Shmona Esrei on a fast day, in terms of how and where you say Aneinu. Ella Shezemit Palel Shmona Esrei Vezemit Palel Tsha Esrei. So the Braisa says that the one who's davening along with the Shliach Tzibur, right, or listening to the Shliach Tzibur, he says 19 brachot because he adds a separate independent bracha of Aneinu and doesn't include it as part of Shomea Tefillah. Shema Mina Yachid Koveya Bracha Latzmo. So there could be a case where the individual, as the Gemara suggests, that the private person, like on a Yeretz site, he says 18 brachot. But a private person on a public fast day would say 19 brachot. Lo. So the Gemara rejects this. It says, Le'olam ema lacha shaliach tzibur. It's only the shaliach tzibur. It's only the chazan who says the extra bracha. And everybody else, whether it's a public fast day or it's an individual who's accepted upon himself a private fast, always does not add a separate, that's not an English sentence. The individual, whether on a private fast day or an individual as part of a public fast day, never adds Aneinu as an independent bracha, but says it as part of the bracha of Shomea Tefillah. But the Shliach Tzibur on a public fast day, he says it as a separate bracha. Udekashyalach shliach tzibur esrin va'arba matzalei. But what about this question we asked earlier about the Shaliach Tzibur, who never says 20 brachot. He always says 24, because they're on a public fast day, their practice was to add in 6 additional brachot, b'shalosh ta'aniyot rishonot, deleika esrin v'arba. So we're talking about, when is this case of the Shaliach Tzibur saying 20? That's the case, 19? That's the case of the first 3 public fasts that were added. The idea of adding additional brachot is only for the later cycles of public fasts that were decreed in times of tragedy, in times of famine and drought. But the initial round of public fast days, and again, these are not the public fast days that are on our calendar now. They were the public fast days that were decreed at need according to famine or drought or whatnot. The initial round of public fast days did not include the extra brachot. So that's the case of somebody goes to shul. They say a regular Shmona Esrei. They don't change the number of their brachot. They add in Aneinu as part of Shomea Tefillah. The Shaliach Tzibur adds Aneinu as an independent bracha, so it's N plus 1. Whatever the number of regular brachot, 18, later 19, then you add 1 bracha. And that's true on the public fast days until you get to the later rounds of public fasts. And on those later rounds of public fasts, it included an expansion of the Shmona Esrei, something completely unfamiliar to us because it's no longer the practice. But there, they would add 6 brachot. 18 plus 6 equals 24. But once the 19th bracha of the Shmona Esrei was added, they would have been reciting 19 plus 6 equals 25 brachot. So you can establish each of these cases. A person who says Aneinu without changing the number of brachot. A person who says Aneinu by adding only 1 bracha. That's the Shaliach Tzibur. And the person saying Aneinu who adds 6 brachot, that's the Shaliach Tzibur on the subsequent rounds of the fast days. Okay, we're going to cut it short and we're going to end here. We'll continue. We're coming up towards the end of the perek. We have another daf after this thing towards the end of the perek. Maybe we'll have a virtual seum or something. Okay. Hope everyone's well. I hope everyone is safe. I'm forgetting. Cecil, you're not in the line of fire down there, right? Or are you?
No, we far away.
What?
We're not. We far from the line
you're
of fire.
Far from the line. Okay. So as are we in Gush Etzion. As are, I think, Bracha and, Bracha, as Bracha in, I think, in Yerushalayim, right? Bracha, you're in Yerushalayim.
Modi'in Elit.
Oh, you're in Modi'in. Oh.
Modi'in Elit.
So you.
We could hear it. We could hear them. In fact, on Shavuos, they were a friend of mine said her daughter was looking out, was outside, and they saw the one of the rockets.
Oh. But have you had to go into your shelters?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Fine. Okay, so hopefully everyone will remain safe, and hopefully next week we'll meet and this will all be over. Okay.
Yes, Lila
Tov.
Shavuot Tov.
Shavuot Tov.